Hello, welcome to Spotlight, an aura of artistic warmth.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we get fierce with Vida, get ambient and immersive with Anarko, and get crony with Matthew. What more could you want? Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. Yes, that's this programme. Poetry, theatre, music, literature, ceramics, sculpture, drag, some of that on tonight. The best, film, mime, social media, on it goes. Howard Kane with an E at manxradio.com or spotlight at manxradio.com. If you prefer, I get them both. Love to hear from you. More people are getting in touch, which is great. I'll be famous one of these days. Be lovely to have you on the show. You know what? You don't get the sort of mix we've got this evening on any other Manx radio show, with the possible exception of Judith Leigh. Right, straight into it. And a woman we've been meaning to catch up with for some time. Drag royalty, no less.
One day I'd like to be the first drag queen with a title. That'd be quite cool. I am Vida La Fierce, the original Manx drag queen.
Yeah, we were just saying, actually, at the beginning there, you're the, how did you describe yourself? The share of the Manx drag scene.
Yeah, we both get to wear spankly and slightly revealing outfits. And there's a couple of mine that have been designed based on Bob Mackie sort of theme things. So, Yeah. If I'm head to toe in sequins and fabulousness, then, you know, pretty sure.
Yeah. But I cheekily described you the other day when I was doing something as the grand dame of the Manx drag scene. But
well, I think it came out as grandmother. Yes, I did hear that. We chuckled. And I was like, oh my God. No, but I thought it was hilarious. And, you know, I take that as a huge compliment.
Excellent. So. Excellent. And how is it? I mean, the scene now seems to be vibrant.
It is. It's brilliant. It's, the Isle of Man is fantastic for entertainment. And I always say that, like, I think we have more talent per square mile than anywhere else in the world. And particularly for the drag scene, you know, per head, we've got quite a few. But it is great. And when I started about 12 years ago, I didn't know if I was ever going to get gigs. I didn't know where would, you know, because drag wasn't quite mainstream then. Obviously, people knew what drag queens were. But, like, RuPaul's Drag Race was kind of becoming a more mainstream thing. And I thought, right, well, I'll take a chance and I'll see. And people loved it. And here I am 12 years later, still getting gigs and releasing music. And I love it. It's the most fun you can possibly have. And hopefully there's a bit more life left in me yet, even though I'm a grandmother of Manx drag.
A very young grandmother.
You know, very young, pert and perky grandmother.
Yeah, well, a year's more to go in yet. You've got to. I've got the T-shirt. I do genuinely have the T-shirt. So you know, you've got to carry on.
Yeah, I intend to keep going until I can't anymore. And the great thing about being a singing queen is, as long as I've still got a voice, whether I'm, like, clicking out on a Zimmer frame or, you know, just sort of being wheeled out on casters or whatever, I still fully intend on wearing something fabulous, getting under some lights and amusingly deafening people.
Where do you get all... I mean, do you make the outfits? Do you have to buy them
specially? I don't have the skills to make them. Sewing is always something I wish I could have done. But I don't have the patience or the talent to do it. I'm, like, in awe of people who have the patience to do sequins and beadwork and stuff. But I get a lot of mine from sequin showstoppers in Birmingham. And wherever I see something fabulous that I grab. I love going away to Las Vegas, so I've picked up a couple of little bits there. And, you know, of course, the internet, you know,
yeah,
can find things
that.
There. But generally, I'm sort of like, ooh, shiny, yay, mine. And like, you'll look at something, you'll think, oh, that's not even a want, that's a need. And like, hummingbird heels is where I get my shoes a lot of the time, where they'll pretty much do anything, any colour, any shoe. But I've got like size 11 feet, so it's quite hard to find nice heels. On a lot of the you know, more normal websites for shoes, once you get into above a 9, you tend to get really boring heels. But Hummingbird heels have got some gorgeous, fabulous things, like some sort of hologram chrome finish things, and like, I just need to own more shoes. I don't think there is such a thing as too many.
Well, yeah, as long as you've got the space. I mean, I think I've probably got too many. I don't even wear heels, but I mean, I seem to have like just far more shoes than I've got feet, realistically.
I think like girl me owns more shoes than everyday me, which is sad and shocking. But yeah, Vida needs more shoes, definitely.
Well, you definitely need more shoes because, you, as you say, you've been sort of slightly out of focusing on other projects recently, but back with a bang with something on a regular basis.
Yes. I've got Encore, Sir Norman's Bar. I've got a fabulous new series of shows there every 2 Saturdays. So I'll be doing like alternate Saturday nights from 9 till midnight, and it's such a good place. It is so much fun. It feels like a really, really good fit for me as well. Because it's such a varied audience that you get. I think it's like the biggest variance of age that I've ever had in one room, which is brilliant. So you know that if you do modern stuff, that's great. If you do show tunes, there's going to be people who enjoy it. And so you can pretty much do a whole world of different material, and it's being enjoyed, which I love. And you know, where I'm positioned, I can see the whole room, and it's just nice to see lots of people smiling and having a good time, and I love that. That's the whole reason we do it.
Oh, totally. Is each show themed then to a specific theme, or is it a mix?
Not really. I sort of generally, my sort of vibe is I'll start off with the slower sort of show tuney, West Endy, Broadway sort of stuff, or some ballads, and then gradually I'll sort of speed it up and get you know, a bit more upbeat as we go on. But it's more I'll look around the room and adapt on the fly, and if it feels right in that moment, there we go. And it seems to be working because we've had some very, very fabulous crowds, and we had a hen do in a few weeks ago.
Oh, they
were absolutely wonderful. I've never seen a hen do stay in one place all night. Normally they're like all over the place, but they booked a table when they saw the poster for it, and they were the most fun. They were so, so fun, and we had a drink together afterwards, and it was just lovely to see people having that much fun and dancing along. And what makes it a different place is it's the first place that I've really performed, especially regularly, that also does food
as
well.
Yeah, that's always good. Yeah.
So, you know, who doesn't love dinner and a show?
What's not to like? You're just saying the first thing. Is this a sort of first regular type sort of gigs? Obviously, been popping up here, there, and everywhere for years, but is this the first regular sort of gig slots you've had?
Well, I've had Rainbow Night at the Saddle and later the Railway for that went on for like 4 years, which was good. So that was sort of the first Saturday of every month, and that was the most regular. And I did the first sort of couple of years of my drag life at the old Guys and Dolls. Before that went. And so I've had a couple of long-standing places, but this one, this feels more exciting and more different and so much more fun. It's you know, it's a really beautiful place. It's you know, it's classy, and it's got, you know, nice lighting, good bar, fancy cocktails, nice food. It's decorated nicely, and it's, you know, right next to the theatre.
Yeah, perfect.
It's in our cultural quarter.
Oh, absolutely.
So it feels like a really good fit. It's nice to be appreciated. It's a wonderful team there. And you know, you've got some fabulous bar staff, and Melody, who's there, I've known her forever. And it's just so, so fun. And you know, you're treated really fabulously. You come in, big smiles, and it's absolutely wonderful. And like, you know, you feel really, really welcome there, which is what you want.
Yeah, totally. And interesting, you were saying you get real mixed sort of clientele.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing that I've always loved is, I don't know if all the queens can say it, but I think I've got fairly broad appeal So I've done like audiences younger, older, everywhere in between and mixed, and I love that because I think my taste's a little bit older as well. Like I love show tunes, and I do like some slower ballady things. So it gives me a chance to do all the material that I enjoy, rather than just focusing on one area. I can focus on all of it, and I love that. But it's such a fun place, and it's nice because you can see people have dinner and watch the show, and they're getting a full night experience there without having to move, which is brilliant. And I mean, sometimes you do get jealous of seeing food, but like you don't want to be eating in drag because like
probably doesn't mix.
Three waist cinches plus food would not go, but it's such a wonderful place, and we have so much fun doing it.
And audience participation encouraged in these evenings?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The more participation, the better. I would say at a Vida concert, there is three rules. The more you sing along, the better I sound. The more you dance, the less I have to. And in nice hologram print silver heels, I really don't want to have to. Six-inch heels, you know, not good for dancing. Good for, like, jiggling about looking fabulous, but not that great for dancing. And the third rule is the more you drink, the better I look. So keep buying.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So this is running, I say, alternate Saturdays through the summer?
Hopefully, yes. As long as they want me and as long as it's popular. And hopefully it'll go for a good long while because it's one of the best places I've definitely been doing gigs. It's so much fun.
Oh, brilliant. And do you think the, just audiences again, you're saying you get a real mixed bag. Do you think, is there so much broader spread to when you first started out?
I think so, yeah. Because I think, I'm one of those nice drag queens, so I'm not mean to people. Like, I'm not saying anyone over here is, but like, obviously drag queens are known for catty humour.
Of course.
A lot of them. That's like the comedy queens will do that. I'm a nice, polite one, mostly.
Well, fierce but nice.
Yes, fierce but fabulous.
Fierce but fair, that's
but,
good.
Yeah, and so I, one thing I do love is you'll see, like, wives bring their husbands in, and the wives will be, like, bobbing along. The husbands won't quite know what to make of this 7-foot-tall, big-haired lady. And You see the eyebrows raise and they'll sort of have a good stare and they'll be a bit confused. But by the end of it, they're bobbing along and having a great time. And I love that. And I just like to see people having a good time, like, and smiling.
Always a joy to catch up with Vida. Check her out on socials, Insta or Facebook. Take in a show, as she suggests, every other week. Dinner as well. She tells me she's cooking up lots of exciting new projects, musical or otherwise. So stay tuned.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
From drag to opera. Come to think of it, I think Vida would be a wonderful Queen of the Night in the Magic Flute, or perhaps Brunhilde in the Ring Cycle. But I don't know whether composer Matthew Warren has her in mind for his opera, the first ever Manx language opera, Cailleach or Crone. When we spoke to Matthew on Spotlight some time ago, the project in its early days, he was getting the PR out there, getting the idea floated. Since then, it's grown arms and legs, plenty of support, and he's been inviting members of the public to get involved with questions regarding the creative process on social media, as I found out when he dropped into the studio to give us an update.
Since last speaking to you, we've had so much support, both encouragement and also financial support from Culture and Arts Council, but also from our crowdfunder. We've had loads of people just get behind the project, which has been so encouraging and has meant we've got to where we are now, which is that I've been working on, well, Bob Carswell has created a wonderful translation, the Manx libretto, which I've been working on him with to iron out any bits that maybe would fit better in different ways as the music emerges. And otherwise, I started composing in about February, and I'm aiming to be done in the next few weeks, which is always lovely to have a hard deadline.
You did set yourself a deadline, did you? Or you had a deadline for it, for completion?
So I have given myself the deadline of the end of this month to complete the full draft of the score. It'll have more iterations after that, but essentially to have everything in place by the end of this month, which... yes, it's soon.
And do you foresee, or do you normally in this sort of process do a lot of tweaking afterwards once you've completed? Will you go back and sort of redraft some of it, change some of it, or will it stay essentially as is?
Yeah, there will be things that end up being redrafted, and one of the main things that will happen is it will come into contact with real performers who will have their own thoughts on how it could be best played, and on things that I've written that can't be played, all those kinds of things that you only realise once you give it to someone. All those things will come back to me and I'll redraft and change things. But I'm anticipating that most of the big structural things will be in place in this first draft, and then it will be tweaking, maybe, but possibly cutting a little if I've been excessive, but minor edits after that.
And do you have anyone, or do you use anyone as a sort of sounding board as you're composing? I know using programs like Sibelius and whatever now, you can listen to the music as you're composing it, as it were, but do you ever sort of run it past someone else, a second pair of ears or eyes, and sort of say, what do you think, before it gets to, as you say, handing it to someone who's going to perform?
Yeah, I try to do that as much as possible without alienating all my friends and associates. So I have various musician friends who I ask about technical questions. Maybe they play the instrument I'm writing for, and so I'll ask, how would you notate this kind of effect, or is there a better way to do this? Is this possible? All those kinds of questions. But then I like to just get general ears on it as soon as possible. So I ask friends, family, what do you think of this little passage? What do you think of this chord? Do you think what does this melody say to you? All those kinds of questions. And then, very excitingly, actually just a recent thing was that at Erin Arts Centre, with Pip at Erin Arts Centre, we co-ran a workshop of in-progress works as part of their Ashton Noor series. And I presented a bit of the opera that, so I got the chance to show it to some other...
So it was the first time out in the wide world?
First time that it was in anything kind of public, yeah, which was very scary. But there was really interesting comments, really good feedback, and a lot to go away and think about. But overall, really positive, and I came away refilled with enthusiasm and excitement about writing it.
And you've been sort of floating as you've been going along on social media as well, and asking people to get involved. Have you had much reaction and people asking, interesting or pertinent questions as to the whole composing process?
Yeah, so I put out a video asking people what they'd like to know about the process, so we can take people along for the journey. And I had loads of great questions back, far more than I was expecting. And I'm slowly working my way through them, just putting out some videos that explain some of the things. So there are quite a few people who are interested in where the story comes from, quite a few people who are interested in some of the musical decisions. And so I'm going to be putting out some more stuff to do with that in the next few weeks. I'd like to get more into the nitty-gritty of the music whilst I'm writing it and it's fresh on my mind. If anyone wants to find out more about that, then they can follow Kaliach on Facebook or Matthew Warren Music on Instagram, and I'll be explaining a little more in depth about what's going on in the process of creating Kaliach.
And it always interests me when you speak to composers or writers or anyone in the creative process, how, and again, there's no, I suppose, strict right or wrong way to do it, and people have very different ways. Do you have a set composing time? Do you wait for the inspiration to strike, as it were? Do you set yourself, or do you have a very set window saying, right, I'll work from here to here? Or how does that work for you?
It's hugely variable for me. I think the only consistent thing I've ever found in my working pattern is that it has to be varied. I can never really expect myself to work the same way.
You can't just say,
day.
I'll work from X to X.
No, sadly not. There are some things that tend to work, so I tend to write very well first thing in the morning. I won't write best before I've done absolutely anything else. So sometimes I'll write before breakfast and, I won't have done anything else, because then you just wake up with this blank slate of a mind that you can then work quite creatively with, I think. But also, sometimes you get very unexpected times when you're just like, well, I just have to write now. So a few nights ago, I woke up at 2:30 in the morning and I wrote from about 2:30 till about 4:30. Because I woke up with just my brain was going round and round all these ideas. I said, well, I've got to make use of it whilst it's here, So I think for me, the key thing is just being aware of how your mind's working and reacting to that, giving yourself the space to make time when the resources are available.
Yeah, and you do quite often hear that, don't you, with creative people who, you know, will keep a notepad or whatever, that maybe the equivalent, a phone or something, on the bedside table now. You often hear people either saying, waking up with these ideas running around their head, or some sort of new idea comes into the subconscious and you suddenly wake up and think, oh, quick, get it down before it goes.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. The piece I wrote for the Milan Festival at the Air and Arts Centre last year was entirely the product of waking up again at about 2 a.m. with this really clear vision of this is what I have to do. And I got up and I wrote all my ideas down. I wrote the whole text and then went back to bed. And you've just got to use it whilst it's there.
And that chat recorded a week or two back. So the end of the month deadline he was talking about for his composing has passed. Hopefully he's still on target. We'll hear more on Kaliak next week, when we'll also be talking to the man who will be directing the opera, David Dawson. Sound of pianist, composer, singer, electronics whiz Hanako Omori, who weaves classical, ambient and electronic influences into her unclassifiable music. Really, the ever wonderful waves of wonder who specialise in bringing music and experiences otherwise never to be heard on the Isle of Man are bringing Hanako over to perform a solo show at the Erin Arts Centre this very Friday, the 8th of May. To find out more, I spoke to Hanako herself from her home in London.
I guess it's always hard to put something in a particular description, but I guess I use a lot of synthesizers in my work, and I process my voice using different effects and pedals and things like that. So I guess it sits between those worlds, I think.
And so when you're talking about processing your voice, do you actually, is it sort of singing, or is it using your voice as a separate instrument?
I'd say a bit of both. I think when I first started making music, I was quite shy of my voice at the beginning, so it was definitely used more as a layer. But I feel like more and more now that I've been making music for a little longer, the songs have become, I guess the music has become more song-led, and there's more lyrics, and I guess it is more of a voice now than just as well as being a textural instrument. But I like to kind of go between the two options.
And you come out of a classical background yourself?
Yes, yeah. So I studied classical piano growing up, but I think my process more is definitely more experimental leaning. I think in the last few years I've been very blessed to play more with friends that are more in the jazz sort of scenes, or more in the experimental worlds as well. And it's definitely been an incredibly eye-opening thing for me, just to see musicians so in their element and really channeling something in that moment. So it's definitely something that I've been incorporating more into the music that I'm making now.
And I think you're right. I think in this sort of crossover where you've got sort of almost like third stream classical, ambient, electronic, you can quite easily sort of cross over into areas of jazz, maybe areas of folk, areas of more sort of minimalistic classical. There's a lot of sort of crossover between the genres, I expect.
Of course. I mean, I feel like music in general is something that we make, or we sing, or we listen to, or we are part of. It's kind of a something to really connect and ground ourselves. So I guess all of those genres, all of these musical outputs are coming from the same source, I guess. So I guess it makes a lot of sense that there is some crossover or some similarities in different approaches of music.
And are the pieces, you mentioned sort of working with some jazz artists there, so is your music, or in your performances, your solo performances, are the pieces scored and composed, or are they improvised on the spot depending on the evening, or a bit of both?
I'd say a bit of both. I think the music that I'll largely be playing on Friday will be from a new record that I've just finished. So it's definitely more, it's a combination of instrumental and songs. Mm-hmm. I guess coming from a very similar sort of emotional processing, kind of, diving deep into ourselves. That's a theme that I've been exploring over the music that I've been making. But I also think that it's such a special moment when you're playing live in a room, when you're playing a show and you're all together for the first time, maybe. I guess it's never going to be the same people in the room at the same time. So I feel like it's really fun to create something in that moment with everyone. So I'd like to think there'll be an element of improvisation and something that will be specifically unique to that particular show.
And do you perceive?
I always like to leave it a bit open.
Do you perceive it as music for mindfulness, as it were?
For me, I feel like music, I think that's when I really reach for music, is when I would like to feel a certain way. Like, I guess I listen to calming music when I would like to feel calm. I listen to sort of energetic music when I like it to pick up my energy. And so I guess in a way it's always connected to mindfulness, and wanting to be in a particular state of emotion. I mean, it's hard to say what people might take from specific types of music, but yeah, I'm not sure if I'd call it mindfulness music per se, but it's definitely a world that I enjoy listening to, for sure.
Surely, and obviously, different music means different things to different people, as you say, depending on how it affects them. But I see sort of Cornelia from Waves of Wonder, who are promoting it, say that Waves of Wonder have been leaning into this concept of sort of shared experience, and in an intimate venue like the Erin Arts Centre, that certainly does lend itself to that. And I was just wondering whether you sort of perceive an evening like Friday as a more performance, or do you see it more as a sort of shared immersive experience?
I'd say the latter, to be honest. I think any sort of live, or any place where you're gathering with a group of people, and some, most of the time it's maybe people that have never been in the same room altogether. I think it's definitely a shared experience where we're all tuning into something, and we're kind of in this moment together. I play a lot with my friend Kay Tempest, who always really reminds me that live music is connection, and when you're playing something in the room, the audience completes a cycle. So I think every show is unique in itself, and I guess the audience and whoever is performing, we kind of create this loop together and this energetic exchange, which is something that I always am incredibly grateful for, and something that something that keeps the live scenario sort of living and breathing.
Nako Mori, who's appearing at the Erin Arts Centre this Friday, supported by Tibor, of a new set specially for the evening. There'll also be an exclusive viewing of a short documentary capturing the Portico Quartet during their performance at the King's Court Theatre in Castletown last September. I wasn't there myself, I was told it was terrific. That's about it for this week, though. Back next week, when we'll be hearing about the Russian Players' latest production, among other joys. In the meantime, be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Emo.